C1B 1 and 2.
Number 15B.
All right. So we have come to Truth or So. Can you see up to this point? I just quickly recapitulate. The main whole tone is that truth is seen to be the savior, that which heals from error. But instead of just saying truth heals from error, Mrs. Eddy shows here that in the development of the idea, one has begun to see that that truth is not just truth, but that it is the truth of mind, the truth of spirit, the truth of soul, the truth of spirit, the truth of life, truth and love. And therefore, when we say truth heals, it means that truth is the truth of mind, namely that it is the divine mind that enables us to have the truth which heals from human conception, that that truth is spirit, that therefore spirit is that truth which takes us away from the material sense of things to the spiritual sense of things, that therefore spirit is that bridge or that mediator through which really a healing can take place by overcoming the material sense of things with spirit. But then comes soul and says, but soul is truth. And therefore, in order to have that truth which really works efficiently, you must see that truth is when we are identifying ourselves with the truth, soul, that we have that Christ consciousness which shows the blending with the Christ, with truth, that it is actually showing that the Christ illustrates that blending with God which gives us dominion. This leads us further to look at truth from the point of view of principle and say, now, what is that truth really? Truth must be defined also through principle, or it isn't truth. My epitome here is this: Jesus uttered the secret things. The secret things. He uttered them. You know, principle always interprets. Principle explains. Principle teaches. Principle preaches. Principle is that which makes itself known. So Jesus uttered the secret things of the creative divine principle. And he didn't utter the things, the proclamations of an anthropomorphic God. So you have principle versus an anthropomorphic God. This is the counterpoint, and shows that this principle alone really can utter the truth, plural, truths thing. Because, he says, Jesus did utter things that were secret. Where did he take the secrets from? What is the origin of his secrets? Where did he get his information? Where did he get his teaching from? I should put the from on the other place, sir. From where did he take his teaching? Is that what you laughed about? Yeah. No. Okay. From where did he take it? Who gave it to him? So he had to go back to his principle instead of to a concept of a God, an anthropomorphic God that would utter his voice and shout somewhere from Sinai or from any other place. He knew that in the secret place of the Most High he would hear principle interpreting himself. And this is where we have to go. We do have to ask ourselves, from where do we take the teaching? Shouldn't we take it from principle? I mean, you can say, all right, you take it from the textbook. That's all right, because we can say the textbook is an utterance of the divine principle. But the textbook, in a way, is naturally limited, because it only can give the system of principle, and not the infinite elaboration of that principle, not the infinite possible inspirations that a principle holds within itself. So we too really should culture that attitude which says, I go to principle and I let principle teach me. If you look back on the development of the idea as we have it today and why I'm here, well, where did John Dolly take the idea of the science of Christian Science? It wasn't spelled out in the textbook. It wasn't so that Mrs. Eddy said, look here, you must study the seven synonymous term with this and this rules, and then you get your true concept of the seven synonymous term. The textbook didn't tell him that this seven synonymous term would constitute a definite scientific order. Nobody told him. It was the principle of being that gave him that insight. The secret things were proclaimed unto him, gave him that deep insight to see in the textbook what he had to see in the textbook, and which were not seen before. And so today, also in this week, you could say, well, what did I do? Well, I only went back to the textbook and told you the teaching of the textbook, but apparently I've been able to teach you the textbook in another way than when you were reading the textbook. Therefore, from where did I get the teaching? From principle, from nowhere else. No human tongue told it to me. And this attitude is an attitude that each one of us must culture, because each one of us must be a discoverer, must be a full transparency for always new inspiration, because everyone is an expression of the revelation of God. So Jesus did utter the secret things from a principle, and he asked, why did Israel not know? Why did people not know what Jesus knew? Why did he know? Why did not the others know? Is it a great question? Why should someone out of millions know it and the others not know it? Is there a partiality in being? Is God partial and chooses just one, picks him out, says, I take you? Or is the divine principle impartial and therefore gives its revelation to anyone who is able to receive it and willing to receive it? Yes. But what is it that prevents most people to receive it? And she gives the answer, because material knowledge has usurped the throne of the creative principle, because we felt we know more than God, that people think they can know, that they are independent workers from God, that they don't need God, that they don't need a principle to know more, to see more, to discover more, to invent more. She says, since material knowledge insisted on the might of matter, this is mostly the case, that one tries to see everything in material terms, and that naturally shuts up the flow of revelation. Since material knowledge insisted on the force of falsity, and because, she says, because spirit was considered to be insignificant, and this is true mostly, why don't people understand the divine principle? Because they consider the spiritual as absolutely insignificant, something that you just can do without it. Think of the whole last century, or say the last 100 years, where material science was considered to be the only science, and that everything that was not based on matter and on material sense testimony, which could not be measured in objective ways, that would not be of any value at all. Is this material evaluation that hinders people from receiving a spiritual message from God? Yes. So, too, we can say to ourselves now, what is it that makes us able to see the truth which heals? That truth must be a principle, therefore from principle, not from material sciences, but from the divine science. And therefore, this is what we like to do with the syllabus classes, really to train and culture the student in the system of principle, so that there is a system in his consciousness, a real grid in his consciousness through which principle can pour through and can structure itself and bring out a scientific discovery. I don't think there is anything in the world that is more beautiful and more satisfying than discover something in the spiritual realm. This is the most satisfying thing. But we have to work for it, and we have to work intelligently for it by culturing our consciousness over and over and over in the divine system of reference. Then the revelation of principle finds within us the necessary instrument, the tools to bring out a new concept, a new idea. And it does it. And we all, or many of us, have proved that over and over. This is the reason why this idea could evolve over the last 40 years. Why was it that this idea that started very small, just investigating the 7 days of creation as a definite order, as an irresistible order. That's how it started. And we had nothing but that for years. How could that small idea unfold and unfold and unfold and unfold until we have now a presentation of that science in order to present what we know today? You know, from the tape catalog, it needs about 500, 600 hours to touch on the subject. This is terrific. This is really the David story where the little shepherd boy, the unpretentious little shepherd boy, grew and became a king over the whole land. But all that was only possible on the ground of truth as principle. Because we did take truth and said it is a principle. It's not just something we have to seek for. It is a principle, and that principle interprets itself only through a system. Principle doesn't interpret itself through people, doesn't interpret itself through thought, doesn't interpret itself through inspiration. It interprets itself through its own intrinsic nature, which is system. Therefore, we have to know the system. Like only can understand like, and like can only interpret like, and only through light. This is the great secret in divine science. That everything comes out, manifests itself out of mind, and through mind, and as mind, and for mind. That all those four big aspects of being must be of the same nature. Yeah. So we come to life. Now, Mrs. Eddy leaves behind the story of Jesus and brings it up now to the universe, to the followers of Jesus, and brings it up to the 6,000-year period. I epitomize it like saying, living our spiritual individuality in spite of persecutions enables us to conquer sin, disease, and death. Have you ever seen such a thing? Have you ever seen what she says here? If that epitome is correct, then it would mean what? As it says, you say truth heals sickness. What is that truth? That truth is life. Therefore, only when that truth is life, is a living truth, a very living truth, only then it heals the sick. But in order to be a living truth, you have to follow truth. And follow truth is always persecuted, and you have to stand in the fire, and you have to take the first onslaught of the enemy and to stand in it. So she says, therefore, with that side note, the cup of Jesus, that all, now she brings it away from Jesus to all, that all should drink it. And who are they, those who drink it? And who has to drink it? And her answer is, whosoever lives the life of Jesus. He doesn't get only wine. He gets a cup. He doesn't only get the wine of inspiration. He gets the bitter cup too. And full and plenty, I tell you. So whosoever declares, she says, the power of Christian science will have to drink that cup. She puts that down as if it were a divine law. Says, you can't escape that. You have to go through it. Jesus went through it. Mrs. Eddy went through it. Everybody has to go through it. Actually, we can take away, really, the cold of the cup, the bitterness of the cup, we can take away. If we know enough, we can even take the bitterness of the cup away. He says, life is here at all times, in all ways, and therefore because it's here, life, in all times, always, it must be infinitely individualized. And that, she says, because it's infinitely individualized, it makes man more real, more formidable in truth. I like that rendering, more formidable in truth. You just can see the whole stature of manhood of Christ that says, to live individually, each one for himself, that truth, that is life, is really giving us a terrific stature, because we begin to embody individually the whole truth. It makes, yes, I read that, it makes man more real, more formidable in truth, and enables him now to conquer sin, sickness, and death. You see, always the last tone that comes in, that enables him to conquer sin, sickness, and death. Did you hear that? Always in every big tone, with truth of mind, truth of spirit, truth of soul, truth of principle, truth of life, it is always saying, how can you conquer with truth, sin, sickness, and death? You need mind, you need the truth of mind, the truth of spirit, the truth of soul, the truth of principle, the truth of life, or you can't do it. So a statement just saying the truth is it that conquers error is true as a statement, but it lacks the power of it. Until one sees it to be that truth is defined through the other synonymous terms. This is very often forgot. See, that's why we have seen in the syllabus class that we said a synonymous term, like truth, is only a synonymous term when it reflects the other synonymous terms, or else something is lacking. So if we only have truth and say truth destroys error or heals, something is lacking until we see that truth to be mind, that truth to be spirit, that truth to be soul, that truth to be principle, that truth to be life, that truth to be truth. And we come to this point where now we reach the point of Christian Science, I think, where she wants now to bring out the point at which she discovered Christian Science as a practical truth that heals sickness. My epitome here is, truth heals sickness by silencing material sense with the truth, small t, of spiritual sense. The specific error has to be healed through the specific truth, small t, and that specific truth is always an idea of the one truth. So you have here truth as truth, the one truth, that is the one truth about all truths. Can you hear truth as truth? About all truths. And every specific truth is the answer, the healing power to a specific error. Therefore, what has to be healed is really the lie, not the disease, the lie which defines disease as reality, which, as she says, originates and supports all that is untrue. How can that lie be silenced? She says this lie must be silenced through the truth of spiritual sense, so that error yields to reality. How does that error yield to reality, she asks, and answers, science depicts disease as error. So, you see, this is the discovery of Christian Science. She was the very first one to declare that disease is not disease, but that disease is something quite different than disease, that it is an error. Perhaps Quimby has seen something like this too, you see. So we come now up to that period of the discovery of Christian Science, which would seem, if we try to reduce, so to say, the message of Christian Science, not of divine science, of Christian Science as a healing science, we would say, well, the point that stands out is really that we don't consider disease as a reality, as a fact. We consider disease as an error. And you know that the whole world laughs about it. You know, when you read any critics about Christian Science, they say, these people are quite funny, you know. They are actually dotty, you know. They say disease is error, and they can see and feel that disease on their body just as anybody else. But that was the great point, that you actually discovered that until disease cannot be reduced to error, therefore to a lie, there is no possibility to heal it with truth. So she goes on and says, well, it is science that first depicts disease as error, and then shows that the science of mind denies error, and so the science of mind heals through truth, which is the fact about error, and so error reversed in this way, reversed, subserves the facts of health. That's truth as truth. Can you see that also? That truth must be seen to be the truth about an error, and the error to be the underlying cause of disease. And finally, she comes to truth as love, and it is as if she would touch here, in a way, that which can then sublimate Christian Science, so that Christian Science can become divine science. Can you say sublimate? You know that term, sublimate? Sublimate, yes. And which I would say was the period of the Bicknell Young teaching, that he took out of the Christian Science textbook only one thing, namely the oneness of being, and stressed just that oneness of being, leaving out the rest. And this is what Mrs. Eddy shows here, that in truth as love, I have said, understanding that man has no other mind but God, all mythological beliefs disappear. You have now the disappearing of the healing. But how? When man has no other mind but God. See, this was the battle cry of the Young teaching. There is only one mind, one God, one ego, one I. There is nothing besides it. He didn't show the bridge of spirit, just that one. And this is naturally, in a way, true, but is not the whole garment. And so here she says that mythology always had mysteries and miracles and sin and death, and that the healing of it, she sees in that marginal heading, God, the only mind, and says that the one mind controls man, and that one mind is to see that man has no other mind but the mind of God, and that would take care of a situation, actually from a higher standpoint than before. So here she does not take in all the explanation that disease is error, and that the error is at the basis of all disease, and that the error is a lie about the reality. Therefore, that lie has to be corrected by the specific truth, and the specific truth is always a truth about the one truth. That's truth as truth. But she goes on and says, but after all, there is only one mind, and if man has no other mind but God, all the rest that is not God-like disappears. And that's true. But that would build the bridge to the next big subject of love, which we'll take tomorrow. A beautiful subject, a terrific subject. That's why I want to spend about 2 hours on that last big subject of love.